So hello. Thank you so much for inviting me here today. I met Pastor Tom a couple years at well, back in 2020, I think. And I met him during COVID, the COVID period, and I saw the YouTube series that he did on mental health. And I just loved that whole series. I loved it all. And then I was just like, I gotta go visit that church. They support mental health, and I just loved it. And I loved all the cool t-shirts he wore night after night after night too. One of my favorite ones was the one that said, "Broken crayons, still color," right? So we've been in touch for a while, trying to collaborate on something and make something happen just because we love the Lord and we are both very passionate about mental health and how important it is to support our churches and the people in our churches who may struggle with mental health. So thank you so much for having me here tonight. My ministry, Fighting Goliath for Mental Illness, started actually last year. It's very new. I have been living with a mental illness for over 2 decades, so it took me quite some time to come out and speak about having a mental illness. So once I was able to muster up the strength and the courage and do what I thought the Lord was calling me to do, I started to speak out. So I'm just gonna start, and this presentation is why mental health should matter to the church. So I also want to just open up in prayer before we start. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this evening. Thank you so much for being at this church tonight and being with all these wonderful people. Lord, help us to, with whatever we do, glorify your name. And you are the one we praise, you are the one who is the most high, and you are the one who paid the price for us all. Thank you so much for who you are, for dying on the cross, and for breaking our chains and breaking the darkness that only you can do and put us back into the light. In your name we pray, amen. Okay, so if you could go to slide 2, please. All right. So why is there a rising awareness for mental health right now? It's because there is help, there is hope, and there is healing. So I just want to read a few statistics here. As of 2020, one out of every five individuals in the United States suffer with a mental health problem in a given year. One out of every 25 individuals in the United States is dealing with a serious mental health disorder. Half of these individuals have the disorder in place by the age of 14. 75% of these individuals have the disorder in place by the time that they are 24 years old. Over 40,000 individuals die from suicide every year. 66% of pastors said they never talk about mental health issues within their church. Not this church, though, right? 30 to 40% of individuals will receive a negative interaction because of their mental health condition within the church. This has been a long road that I have traveled. Like I just said, it took me over 20 years to finally open up about the condition that I live with. I could not stand up here tonight and stand before you all tonight if I did not have a come to Jesus moment fully, if I did not know God like I know God today. I had to really know God to be able to learn to love myself again and to be able to know myself. So a lot of this started for me back in 2020 when our pastor was preaching a message at church. And the message was called, "What Does the Blood-Stained Cross Mean to You?" And that question in general is just so powerful. what does the blood-stained cross mean to you? And then he says, and what are you going to do about it? Well, I had felt God pulling at my heartstrings for years, and I had felt it was always around the subject of mental health, but I feared it. I didn't even want to go there. I felt like I was unequipped. I had not studied theology in school. I was not a mental health professional. I just was really scared. Over all this time, I was like the best actress out there because I had played the part for so long. It just becomes part of who you are when you play this part and you can't really fully be yourself. It's often the one thing in life and the hardest thing that takes the most courage that God is going to end up using, right? It's usually that thing that does take the most courage. So this verse, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known made to God. That's it, Philippians 4:6. So March 2023 rolls around, and we have a woman's prayer group that meets every month at the first of the beginning of every month, and I was asked to give my testimony. I told them that we need to first go over the safety measures of my testimony because they need to fasten their seatbelts like I had to do on the plane ride over here tonight, because it's going to be a lot of ups and a lot of downs, and it's going to be a really crazy ride. So it took everything in me to get through that conversation that night. At one point, there were so many tears, I couldn't see my notes anymore. I had to pause. I had to pull myself back together and repeat, you know. But I finally did make it through the testimony. But what I noticed through the testimony and by the end of the testimony is, after sharing my story, the conversations that started to happen within that prayer group that night, and how just little by little people started to open up about maybe their friend or their family member or somebody they knew that also was struggling with their mental health. And it became quite clear to me that this was the path that God wanted me to stay on and continue to go down this path. So how many of you are familiar with NAMI? Do you know what NAMI is? It's the National Alliance for Mental Illness. So in 2023, I took training to serve on the National NAMI helpline for 6 months. The wealth of information and the wisdom of the overall view about mental health was a gift to me by the end. In the training, you are trained on how to properly transfer the call if the person is displaying signs of suicide or is acting like they have suicidal tendencies. My very first call on my very first shift was a suicide call, and I was scared to death. I was shaking, and I immediately reached out to the helpline captain, and I'm like, you're going to have to help me through this, because I didn't know if I was going to be able to get through it or not. You know, through the training, they said, most of the calls are going to be for the resources, and yes, and helping them. We don't receive, you know, too many, you know, calls like that. But if we do, you know, these are the measures we need to take. Just so happens my very first call is one of these calls. I was so upset after this call, and it was fine. We got that person the help that they needed. But it really tore me up that weekend, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to, you know, continue doing that and trying to help somebody. It brought up a lot of things that I had gone through in the past. But I did. And the next Friday, I worked another shift. And the week after that, I worked another shift. And as each week passed, I saw how what I went through and the pain that I went through was actually helping other people who maybe are going through anxiety or depression? Are they that they live with bipolar disorder? Are their family member, are their mother, are their father, they just don't know what to do anymore? And, you know, with every week with that as well, I gained a little bit more confidence that, yeah, my story is, I can do this, you know? I think I can do this. So I stayed on with them for 6 months, and it was the most awesome experience ever. After that training with them, I continued to take training with NAMI. I went into advocacy training. I don't know if you guys have ever participated in any of the NAMI walks, but every May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and they have yearly walks for community to come together, to get together and support mental health as a whole. I became a peer-to-peer mentor. I mean, I was like plunged in, you know, I was like, I'm going all in. So then I got involved with what's called a NAMI FaithNet program. And through NAMI FaithNet, they talk about building stigma-free relationships within a church. So last year, after I went through that training, I started a little bit just going to speak at different churches, and they have this awesome stigma-free program, and I'll give all that information to you too, Pastor Tom, so you can have that, in a Bridges of Hope program on how we can support the people within our church. And I knew after doing that and talking at the few churches that I did last year that this is just something I wanted to do. This is something I was feeling, I felt like God was calling me to do. So let's go to slide 3, please. So from the beginning, the Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." God created us to love one another. The greatest commandment is found in Matthew 22:37-39, and also Mark 12:29-31. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and with all your soul. And the second is just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Slide 4, please. People are struggling, and people are looking for relief from the pressure, the pain, and the pace of this world that we live in. 46% of people do not seek help because of the stigma of mental health alone. Mental health affects everyone. Nearly 60 million Americans are affected by mental illness every year. That is 1 in 5 will have a mental health condition every single year. And we need to recognize the level of danger, the level of distress, and the level of need when it comes to mental health. The Apostle Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians 1:3-4, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God." Then Paul also tells us in Ephesians 4:12-16, to equip his people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. And that he does. People need to know how much that we care. The last thing we want to do is turn someone away who is suffering because we don't know how to help, or we don't know what to say, or we fear how to help or what to say, or we don't have the resources that we need to help. You don't need to be a mental health professional to be able to help somebody. We just need to know the basics, right? And sometimes all that person needs to know is that you're there and present for them, and that you don't even need to say anything half the time. You just sitting there beside them lets them know how much that you care. Mental health is not only a social issue, but a public health issue. 50% of all lifetime cases of mental illness begin by the age of 14. 50% of all lifetime cases of mental illness begin by the age of 14, and age 24. Early identification is key. Suicide is now the second leading cause of death in youth ages 14 through 24. So whatever we have been doing so far, right, is just not enough, and it hasn't been enough. We must work together to save lives and to save our youth. Many individuals and family do not recognize the early signs of unusual behaviors, thoughts, or moods as a treatable health condition. If the mental health condition goes untreated, it can sometimes sweep away the person's ability to live a healthy, normal life. So, in this room here tonight, how many of you know of someone who lives with a mental health condition, or, you know, you yourself, your family? So if we look around the room right now, I mean, pretty much that's like 85% of the hands are raised. And when I have the opportunity to go somewhere and share my story, I always ask that question, and the same percentage of hands are always up. So obviously it's something that needs our attention. In the beginning of my journey, my family nor I knew how to navigate having these conversations because we were just trying to wrap our heads around what we were currently dealing with, yet alone try to have that conversation with someone else. My symptoms started for me right out of after graduation from college. I was 23. I was first diagnosed with MDD, which is major depression disorder, and OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. It took 3 very, very long years before I was given the diagnosis of bipolar 1 disorder. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But it was challenging. It was challenging to find the course of treatment between the medications, between the hospitalizations. My depression was so bad and the medications were not helping that they decided that the next course of action would be ECT treatments. ECT treatments are electroconvulsive therapy treatments where a brief seizure is done. You're put under anesthesia and a brief seizure is done to your brain to kind of shake all those neurotransmitters up to get something to jive. Those treatments did help. I had a series of 12 of those treatments done, and they did help to help me get through that depression and get on my feet again. But they also come with some risk. I do and have had, you know, memory issues that I can't remember certain things from my childhood or high school or college years. I can remember things. I just can't remember all things, you know. But they did help me to get me back on my feet. What works for me may not necessarily work for someone else. Slide 5, please. So what is mental health? Mental health are health conditions that can disrupt a person's thinking, moods, ability to relate to others, and perform daily functions. So the serious mental health conditions are MDD, major depression disorder, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD, post-traumatic stress disorder, known as PTSD, and borderline personality disorder. Mental illness can affect persons of any age, race, religion, or income. Living with a mental illness is not a result of personal weakness, lack of character, or poor upbringing, and it is not anybody's fault. Genetics, environment, and lifestyle all play a role in mental illness. The causes of mental illness are many, and there is still much to be learned about them. What we do know is that they are common and they are very serious. A mental illness is a condition that affects a person's thinking, feeling, or mood. Such conditions may affect someone's ability to relate to others and function every day. Each person will have a different experience, and each person will not have the same diagnosis, and each person needs their own unique medical treatment plan to find what works best for them. So we're not going to go into all the disorders or anything tonight, but I would like to just go over those 6 so we can just talk about it a little bit. And can I have six people to help me to read these disorders so you just don't hear my voice all night long? So would six people kindly raise their hand? Okay, awesome. So I'm going to give you this one. So if you would kindly read depression. And I'll just stand by you right here so you can.
Oh, I'm doing that now?
Yeah.
Okay. Depressive disorder, frequently referred to simply as depression, is more than just feeling sad or going through a rough patch. It's a serious mental health condition that requires understanding and medical care. Left untreated, depression can be devastating for those who have it and their families. Fortunately, with early detection, diagnosis, and a treatment plan consisting of medication, psychotherapy, and healthy lifestyle choices, many people can and do get better.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So that is definitely the start of my journey with depression. The depression was awful. It was horrible. I couldn't really get out of bed. And if I did get out of bed, it felt like I had weights just around my ankles. It became, for a very long time, a very dark period of time. And in the beginning, before we knew how to treat my illness, there was a suicide attempt because I just couldn't get out of the darkness. I didn't see any other way out. I didn't even know what was happening to me in the beginning. It wasn't something I was familiar with, and it got that dark that the pain was that deep that I just didn't see any other way. Okay, so the second one here is schizophrenia. Can I have somebody to help me read schizophrenia? Awesome. What is your name?
Sarita.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for letting me read this, because my sister has that.
Absolutely.
Schizophrenia, slide 8, is a serious mental illness that interferes with a person's ability to think clearly, manage emotions, make decisions, and relate to others. It is a complex, long-term medical illness. The exact prevalence of schizophrenia is difficult to measure, but estimates range from 0.25% to 0.64% of U.S. adults. Although schizophrenia can occur at any age, the average age of onset tends to be in the late teens to early 20s for men and the late 20s to early 30s for women. It is uncommon for schizophrenia to be diagnosed in a person younger than 12 or older than 40. It is possible to live well with schizophrenia.
Thank you. Thank you. There's an awesome book. It's called Troubled Minds, and it is about a daughter wrote it about her mother, who lives with schizophrenia, and the mother's husband was a pastor, and he ended up having to step down from the ministry to help take care of his wife. But this book is incredible. It's called Trouble Button Minds, and the author is Amy Simpson. So it is about her mom living with schizophrenia. And I have some other book references we can go over at the end, too, that are very helpful. Number 3 is bipolar disorder. I'll read this one because this is what I live with, but bipolar disorder is a mental illness that causes dramatic shifts in a person's mood, energy, and ability to think clearly. People with bipolar experience high and low moods known as mania and depression, which differ from the typical ups and downs most people experience. The average age of onset is about 25, but it can occur in teens or more uncommonly in childhood. The condition affects men and women equally, with about 2.8% of the U.S. population diagnosed with bipolar disorder and nearly 83% of cases classified as severe. If left untreated, bipolar disorder usually worsens. However, with a good treatment plan, including psychotherapy, medications, a healthy lifestyle, a regular schedule, and early identification of symptoms, many people live well with the condition. It is not, living with bipolar disorder has not been easy. I actually never thought I was going to get to the point where I would cross the line to be able to help another person. I never did. And like I said, it took me 20 years to come out and talk about my bipolar disorder, because with me too, I felt a lot of shame attached with it. I live with bipolar 1 disorder, so there's different kinds of bipolar disorder. There's bipolar 1, bipolar 2, cyclothymia disorder, and then there's also an unspecified or specified disorder or whatever. The main difference, though, between bipolar 1 and bipolar 2 is they're all very serious. The main difference between bipolar 1 and bipolar 2 is that bipolar 1, you do have hallucinations and delusions, and bipolar 2, you don't, but you have all the other symptoms. Let me explain what, my paper in here. I don't know where it is. I was going to explain more about the cyclothymia disorder in the specified and unspecified, but I don't have my notes on that. So, but there are 4 different types of bipolar disorder. The 4th one is OCD. Does somebody want to help me read OCD? Going once. What's your name? Ginger. Hi, Ginger. It's nice to meet you. Here you go.
That's okay. Obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, is characterized by repetitive, unwanted, intrusive thoughts, obsessions, and irrational, excessive urges to do certain actions, compulsions. Although people with OCD may know that their thoughts and behavior don't make sense, they are often unable to stop them. Symptoms typically begin during childhood, the teenage years, or young adulthood, although males often develop them at a younger age than females. 1.2% of U.S. adults experience OCD each year.
Thank you. Thank you. So in the beginning of my journey, I was also diagnosed with OCD, and mine started with, I was dating this boyfriend, and oddly enough, this is how it started for me, but he was very kind of controlling and picky about me, and he would pick out little imperfections on me all the time, and pick out little imperfections on my face, and he'd be like, you need to look at that. Is there something in there that needs to, you know, come out or whatever? Well, I took it to a whole nother level. I started looking at every single, like, pore on my face. It turned into where I would examine my pores for hours, then 2 hours, then 3 hours, where all I would do is sleep and examine my pores, sleep and examine my pores. It got out of control. But I really believed that, you know, there were things in there that needed to come out, even if there weren't. And during this time, I was starting to hurt myself, because in my mind, I was like, there's stuff in there that needs to come out. And I started making all these cuts on my face, and then it moved to checking it elsewhere, and I would make cuts elsewhere. Anyway, that's where I was first diagnosed with OCD. I was not able to control it. It was very repetitive. I had to do it for a certain period of time before I felt like I could stop. And it turned into hours. It became my life. I could drive in my car. If I did take a drive in my car, and I would have to pull over into a parking lot and check because it would consume my mind that badly. I was in a parking lot one day for so long that the police came up to my car to make sure I was okay because I was sitting in there looking at my pores in the light, you know, so I could see them better. I have got that under control now, but my OCD has expanded into other areas of my life. But that is how that all started for me. Okay, the next one is PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder. Traumatic events such as an accident, assault, military combat, or natural disaster can have lasting effects on a person's mental health. While many people will have short-term responses to life-threatening events, some will develop longer-term symptoms that can lead to a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. PTSD symptoms often coexist with other conditions such as substance use disorders, depression, and anxiety. A comprehensive medical evaluation resulting in an individualized treatment plan is optimal. PTSD affects 3.6% of the U.S. adult population, about 9 million individuals. About 37% of those diagnosed with PTSD are classified as having severe symptoms. Women are significantly more likely to experience PTSD than men. So at one point in my life, I was also diagnosed with PTSD. And this was back in 2019-2020-ish area, and at the time I was working as a regional material for a packaging company, and there were two different locations that I was working out of. The job came with very high stress, and eventually I couldn't do the job anymore, and I knew I couldn't do the job anymore. So my husband and I talked about it, and we're like, I'm going to have to put in my resignation because this is just too much. And we saw it coming. You see the flags, you see the red flags, and you get to know these red flags as you continue to live with having a mental health condition. But I knew that I could no longer do it. So at that time, my doctor had to adjust my medications. I was already taking two medications, and they decided to add a third. After taking this third medication, there was so much serotonin that was in my body that my body could not process, that I was that night rushed in an ambulance to the hospital and was diagnosed with serotonin syndrome. The side effects that I had was an irregular heartbeat and high blood pressure. I had seizures, high tremors. I could not stop shaking. I was in and out of consciousness. I had uncontrolled muscle spasms and total loss of muscle coordination from my waist down. And I'm going to read you this little part that I talk about this in depth in a book that I have written that is coming out in the spring, but this is a little bit from this book. For over 6 hours in the emergency room, I was unable to walk. If I needed to use the restroom, I would go in a bedpan and with the help of a nurse. The doctors were able to explain all the symptoms that we just talked about, but one. I told them not once, not twice, but three times, I had a slow rushing sensation that went through my whole body from my head to my toes. The first time was while I was laying in my mother's arms on our living room floor waiting in my home for an ambulance. She just kept praying over me and over me. In Jesus' name, please don't take my daughter. In Jesus' name, please don't take my daughter. That was the first head to toe warm rush, right? The second one came when my dad came into the ER and sat on the left side of me. He was like, you're going to be okay. We're going to get through this. You're going to be just fine. It happened again then. The third time was when my husband came in and sat on the right side of me saying the same thing. You're going to be okay. We're going to get through this. Another rushing sensation. I will tell you, I know that rushing sensation was the Spirit of God telling me that I was going to be okay. I didn't know if I was coming or going, honestly, but I wasn't scared. I was fine, you know, but I knew it was the Spirit of God telling me either way, I was going to be okay. So I did experience PTSD for a while. I was diagnosed with PTSD after that night because that night was very traumatic. After I went home that night, for months after, I would wake up in the middle of the night screaming, sweating, having horrible nightmares about that night. I replayed it over and over and over in my mind. And then eventually later on, after you know, my doctor and we had a medical treatment plan for that, we did get through it. But PTSD is very severe. And then the last one is borderline personality disorder. And borderline personality disorder, BPD, is a condition characterized by difficulties regulating emotion. This means that people who experience BPD feel emotions intensely and for extended periods of time. And it is harder for them to return to a stable baseline after an emotionally triggering event. This difficulty can lead to impulsivity, poor self-image, stormy relationships, and intense emotional response to stressors. Struggling with self-regulation can also result in dangerous behaviors such as self-harm. It's estimated that 1.4% of the adult U.S. population experiences BPD, you know, it's like, try to say that three times in a row. It wouldn't come out. I know it wouldn't. Nearly 75% of people diagnosed with BPD are women. Recent research suggests that men may be equally affected, but they are commonly misdiagnosed with PTSD or depression. So borderline personality disorder is also the highest risk disorder for suicide among all the other disorders as well. So a great place to learn more about any of these conditions is by visiting NAMI.org. If you've never been on their homepage website, they have a wealth of information. You can learn about each of these conditions. You can print out fact sheets. Each of the conditions have a YouTube video that corresponds with them. And also at the bottom of the homepage, for like Marion, Ohio, you guys have a specific affiliate for this area for Marion, Ohio. So you can also reach out to that affiliate and see you know, the types of programs, the free programs that they have for this area to help you, and also the events that Marion, Ohio, they support. So, and I'll give that information to you guys too at the end. So if someone comes to you about their mental health, you need to know how to be there for that person. One of the most important things we can do is actively listen to understand the person and meet them exactly right where they are, not trying to fix the situation. It's that famous saying that says, people don't know how much you care. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, right? People don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. We need to be seen as a person and not the illness that we live with. One of the easiest things that we can do is learn to be mindful of our language and how we talk to ourselves and others about their struggles. How we relate to others in their health struggles with mental illness is important. We can be more compassionate and understanding and take those first steps to pause and not reply too soon, to really think before we speak. We need to be careful. We need to carefully evaluate what is being said and listen to understand. Slide 13, yes. James 1:19 says that everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Also, how we say certain things, like you'll hear somebody maybe say, committed suicide. And we don't say committed suicide, we say died by suicide, because using the word committed implies that you've done something wrong. It replies kind of that, almost like you've committed a crime, and living with a mental illness is certainly not living with a crime, or because you've committed a crime. Commit is often a word used when referencing a crime or even sin. And for the families who have tragically lost someone to suicide, it acknowledges this loss respectfully, lets them know that they have experienced a death and deserve comfort and understanding in how we speak. Instead of saying she is bipolar or he is schizophrenic, it's my daughter lives with bipolar disorder, or my son lives with schizophrenia. We are not, again, our disorders. Putting the person first helps them to feel like a person again and not their illness. This way the person senses your belief that they can get better and they are not limited by having this mental health condition. Avoid using labels, words like crazy, loony, not normal, and any other judgmental word that can be hurtful, because what we really want to be is helpful and not hurtful. Slide 14, please. Thank you. Great examples of responses we can say is, I care about you and I am here for you. Another one, how can I help you right now? Thirdly, I know this must have been hard to share with me and I am so proud of you. Fourth, I'm always here if you'd like to talk. Avoid saying things like, why are you so worried? Or, I totally get that. I hate that when somebody says that. No, you don't. Three, everything is going to be okay. Yeah, I don't like the one either. What? Four, you need to ... We're not trying to fix the situation. We're just trying to, again, meet that person where they are. Fine, and I know exactly how you feel. No, you don't. So, active listening and active engagement with the will of God establishes the relationship that will help to produce effective change. Another easy step we can take is by reaching out to that person, of course, with their permission. Everyone's timing is different and unique. Like I said before, no two people are the same. What works for me may not work for someone else. Slide 15. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, encourage one another and build each other up. Slide 16. So why is faith and spirituality so important? I'm going to look this way because I can't see that far. Faith communities have a role to play. Mental illness can, for some, cause feelings of spiritual isolation and estrangement. Some people and their families caught in the turmoil, often surrounding mental illness, can feel lonely. Community can help, and a spiritual community for many is a lifeline. In the midst of turmoil, where do we belong? For some, living with a mental illness can test our faith and may profoundly impact our spiritual journeys, sometimes positively and also sometimes negatively. So what are some things we could do, you know, to help each other in our churches who may struggle with a mental health condition? Do you guys know what some things we could do? Exactly. Pray with them. What else? Absolutely. It's so encouraging over the years when I would receive an email or a letter or somebody, they wouldn't just drop on in because you don't necessarily want really somebody to drop on in if you can't even get out of bed. But if there are times, you know, where that is talked about and they come to visit, that is also very nice because it can be very lonely. But we can pray openly about mental illness like we do physical illness, right? I know in a lot of our Wednesday night services, you hear everything under the sun physically to pray for, but you don't often hear people asking for prayer for their daughter who lives with bipolar disorder, or their son who lives with schizophrenia, or, you know, that they need prayer right now because of a mental health condition. So we can openly pray about mental illness within the church to help normalize that conversation. We can encourage sermons about mental illness, just like Pastor Tom did with that YouTube series. That was awesome. But we can, you know, say, you know, within our sermons, you know, talk about it a little bit more, incorporate that in the sermon somehow. We can offer hope and encouragement by emailing, texting, calling, sending notes, put them on the prayer list with their permission. I brought this one card that someone sent me one year. I have an awesome church family. I just love them dearly. But on the front of it says, "Feel better." It has a bouquet of flowers held by a Band-Aid with a heart on it. And then in the inside it said, "Sending healing thoughts your way." But it's what she did. She didn't just send the card. She took action and wrote in the card. And she said, "Oh, sweet girl, I so wish I could take over your illness and allow you to run carefree with your family. I wish I could set your mind free. I've had the good life. I am older now, and I want a great life for you, Jason," which is my husband, and our beautiful girls. And we have three girls, 17-year-old, 14, and 11. "You are stronger than you know because God gave you this family. I don't know why I took such a liking to you and loving you like I do, but please know I am here and will help you in any way. I can just hold your hand, smile, cook, and always remind you that you are loved, but you already know that. You are special, and I love you, Kathy." I have never, ever, I cherish this card. And these are things that when you're really struggling, people don't forget. They don't forget the people who reach out to help them, and they are that person who brings them that torch, you know, when they need it in the middle of the night. Okay, so we could also offer to take a meal to the family or the ones struggling. Many times when I would hit a depressive low, I could not get out of bed and everything would fall on my husband. I am very blessed to have such a wonderful husband. I know God created him especially for me because I am one complex woman. he's wonderful, but a lot of people don't have the support system that I have been blessed to have either, and they are trying to handle this all on their own. That is why we need to support them as well. It's a very, very lonely place to be, and when you are keeping this all to yourself, and staying silent all to yourself, silence can eventually lead to destruction, and destruction can lead to devastation. So we have to remember that living with a serious mental illness is not a linear process, that this is something that is a journey. It's something that we will have to face for the rest of our lives. We can provide space at our church to have support groups to meet and have the basic resources available if someone approaches you about mental health. We live in a broken world where living with a mental illness feels like at times you are an outcast to many. This is why it is so important for churches to have the resources and be equipped for those who are in need. Churches need to help break the myths and stigma about mental illness. Churches should not be a part of the stigma that does exist. We need to be helping to normalize the conversations like we do with physical illness, like we were just talking about. If we do that, those who struggle may feel safe enough at some point when they are ready to open up about their struggles. Everyone who has mental illness does not necessarily need medication. But for those who do, like myself and many others, that is okay. Sometimes this is needed for that person to be the best version of themselves. And it might not always be needed. It just needs to get them to the point where, you know, to help them at that point in time. Just like those who take medication for diabetes or high blood pressure, we see nothing wrong with that. We should see nothing wrong with people who have mental health conditions who also need to take medication to make them be the best version of themselves. Our mental health system in the United States is chaos. There is not a structured system with a clear point of entry. Our system is fractured and very disjointed. We have the opportunity to come together in our churches to be the bearing burden people that God has called us all as Christians to be. Slide 18, please. So, I can't see that either. Suicide, we mentioned this before, is now the second leading cause of death in youth age 14 through 24. We need to work together to bridge the gap. We cannot wait until it gets to the crisis stage before we're helping somebody. We need to catch it on the front end, and that would help tremendously. Mental illness can affect any persons of any age, race, religion, or income. We already said this. Living with a mental illness is not the result of personal weakness, lack of character, or poor upbringing. I just want to go over some of the things you may see if somebody is experiencing suicidal ideation. You know, they might start to really isolate themselves. They might stop doing the things that they once loved to do. Their whole attitude can change. You might see anger, how they are acting out. Sometimes what can trigger some of these things is a life-changing event in their life, such as a job loss or a loss of a loved one, loss of pet, you know. So these are certain signs that we need to recognize. And when we see these, just to make sure to check in on them and to see if they are okay. Living with a mental illness, is not because of lack of faith or that we need to pray more. We are not to condemn people who live with a mental illness or treat them any differently. Living with a serious mental illness is a chronic condition. It doesn't just go away. It must be maintained. Just because you see it doesn't mean someone is not suffering. It is not our responsibility to try to fix someone. The hard truth about living with a mental illness is that person who is living with the mental illness is the only person who can actually fix the situation. You can live a fulfilled life living with a serious mental illness, and I am living proof that you can live a fulfilled life. I have spent many a times in a psychiatric unit. I have spent many a times on all different medications trying to find the medication that was going to work and make me the best version of myself. I've had to do many things over the years that I hated and were very challenging, and I never thought my family and I were going to get through them, but we did. There was a light at the end of the tunnel, and now I live a very, very fulfilled life. I have a beautiful family, and we have three beautiful girls, and I was working full-time, but then last week I turned in my resignation because it wasn't working too much anymore. I just had too much on my plate. But even things like that, you learn what you have to maintain with living with the mental illness. You know and you learn what your red flags are. So for those of you who are caretakers, hard is an understatement. I know what my parents went through, and it was hell for them when I was living under their roof in the beginning for over 3 years. It was not good. My mom would walk by every day, and she would want to rip me out of that bed. She would come in, open up the blinds, and I would get mad. I would be like, I don't want any light coming in here. And she'd try to open up the blinds. I'd go right behind her and close them. And, you know, it's just a caretaker's responsibility, too, is so important. You have to, as a caretaker, take care of yourself, too, because if you don't take care of yourself, you will not be able to take care of that person that you love. There's a great new book also that came out from NAMI just recently, specifically written for You Are Not Alone, for caretakers of people who take care of people with mental health conditions, and it's a really great resources. Faith communities in general don't have the discussions they need concerning mental health in their church. Mental health conversations are not openly discussed when they need to be to help normalize the conversation to create safe spaces. Silence is a weapon that can kill. Reaching out and helping one another is not a weakness, it is a strength. We tend to lose the courage when it comes to those who live in the darkness. We fear having these types of conversations because we don't know what to say or how to help. These people are in our churches week after week. These people can also be our pastors. A lot of faith leaders have a 24/7 mentality that they cannot turn off. They don't know when the next call is coming, the next text is coming, or even the next criticism is coming. We have these expectations from our church leaders that can wear and tear on them and also affect them spiritually. Dr. Awad is a clinical professor of psychiatry, shared that 90% of pastors worldwide work more than 50 hours each week, and burnout is often the leading cause of depression and anxiety within our pastors today. We need to foster empathy and compassion when it comes to mental health. You can be a very deeply spiritual person and still experience depression or live daily with a mental illness. Slide 19. So how do we help people and families affected by mental health? My ministry, Fighting Goliath, if you visit the webpage, there's a whole resource section on there. So I have tons of resources listed if you need a resource. We also, secondly, need to build a stigma-free church when it comes to mental illness. It is the mind, body, and spirit. And Jesus gave us all the mind, body, and spirit to take care of. And the third is to have resources available. That is the Marion contact information. It's Marion in Crawford Counties, Ohio. But I'll give this information to Pastor Tom, too, for your contact here for this area. People ask me all the time, how do I maintain living with my disorder? And I told them it took a very long time. To find what was going to work with me. I know now what that is. But more importantly, too, I know that every single day I have to put on the full armor of God to be able to do it. That was how I crossed the line, was knowing how to finally take care of myself, and then secondly, trusting Christ fully, that trusting him that he was going to take me through every single day. And every single day, I put on that full armor of God, especially that helmet of salvation to protect this mind. I mentioned, God has given me the words to write a book about my journey. And this spring, I have my book coming out. It's called Fighting Goliath for Mental Illness, Slaying the Giant of Bipolar Disorder. And I'm just going to read you just a little bit about what this book is about. What is the biggest giant in your life? After being diagnosed with an acute mental illness at the age of 26, these were unwanted circumstances that I didn't want any part of. There was no amount of wishing it away. It took years before the proper diagnosis of bipolar 1 disorder was even given. Each year, millions of people look to the internet for answers to their deepest struggles and pain. People are hurting and people are searching for hope. Only a small circle of friends knew the hell my family and I were living in. We didn't know how to navigate these circumstances and live with the cards that were dealt. What do you do when Satan is attacking you and your family? What do you do when there is nothing left and you don't want to go on living anymore? What do you do when God is silent? Your spiritual growth and maturity will depend on how you respond each and every time. Living with a serious mental illness is not a quick fix or just snap out of it solution, and never will be. It is not a linear process. You will be riding the mental health monster roller coaster when you read this book. From many highs to many lows, the journey of living with bipolar disorder will never be a dull moment. How you learn to take care of yourself in the process will determine your steps from one day to the next. The hard truth is no one can fix you but yourself. The reader will find that when you face the biggest giant of your life head on, Jericho walls can come down. You can do all things through Christ who gives you strength. You just have to believe it. So I am so excited that that book is going to come out next spring. So yay, be sure to check that out if you're interested. So finally, just to wrap this up tonight, we can encourage others that we do recognize mental illness in our church, and we support those who are here for those in their family who live with mental illness. We can take action. We can listen actively. We can encourage understanding. We can raise awareness that living with a mental illness is not a result of personal weakness or lack of character, or that we are not a good enough Christian. We live with an illness just like someone else living with physical illness such as diabetes or cancer. This should be treated in the same way. To build a mental health movement, we need all to learn, see, and take action. We can, as a faith community, raise awareness to help ensure we are welcoming a caring congregation for those in need. We need to remember people with mental illness are members of our congregation. They are our children, our teens, our family, our friends, our coworkers, our neighbors, and we can make a difference. This is not going away. We as Christians need to be compelled to know what to do. We don't have to have this all figured out, but by knowing and recognizing that stigma around mental illness is very real, we as churches can recognize this, and often the church is the first point of contact. One of the most important numbers that you can know is 988. Congress passed it in 2020. It's the crisis line. And you have the option to call or text 988, our chat at 988lifeline.org. And since July 2020, they have received and routed roughly 8.6 million calls, texts, and chats. In a month, on average, they route 507,396 calls. And for veterans, there's a crisis line with the option 1 if you dial in. And they have routed 59,983 calls for veterans over in a year period of time as well. If you do happen to call 988, also ask for a mobile crisis line, or not a mobile crisis line, I'm sorry, a crisis response team, because when you ask for a crisis response team, they send out people who are in the mental health professional field or also a peer specialist to help to assess the situation, and not just the police officers. And that can, really help that situation.